Thank you. Need to take a look at all of you so that I can get my bearings a little bit about me. This is a difficult thing for me to talk about. And as Doug said, it's my testimony, but it's really not something that I've ever shared in this type of setting. In fact, I haven't talked about this topic since my son's funeral. And that, of course, was a little bit of a different type of topic. So anyway, I wanted to come here today, though. I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to say yes to the idea of having something to say. Yes to the idea that I have a son living in heaven and a son whose legacy I don't want to have die. Yes to the idea of repeating his name, telling his story, and telling my story. But then I came to the harder part, articulating just what that story is. So in order to keep on track, I have to rely on reading my notes more than I'm used to when I'm interacting with people. And so you're gonna have to bear with me while I do that. That's why I'm looking at all of you now, because for me to keep things together, I'm probably gonna have to look down quite a bit, because life is messy. This topic is messy, and I get a little bit messy. And that's okay. So if I start bringing out Kleenexes, don't feel like you have to come rescue me. I'll keep plodding through. So it did hit me, as Doug said, today is Mother's Day. How do you talk about a tough topic on Mother's Day? But then something hit my newsfeed that put the day into context. The two women who are credited with advocating to establish a day to honor mothers, a Mother's Day, were doing so to rally mothers to protect their children from war and from public disease. Because, as one of them said, when it comes to a waste of human life, mothers alone bear the cost and know that cost. So today, I want to share a story of my son, Jake. This is Jake. And I want to share my thoughts since his death, as our stories have woven into one, because I do and know and bear the cost. Many of you are familiar with me or my family. I grew up here in Linden, spent most of my youth as part of this church family. This is a building that's familiar to me. I left for college and law school and then returned to marry a guy from Everson. Everson, which most of you know, should not be confused with Linden. John had also returned to the area after spending his young adult life traveling and attending school in far-off places. We married, and we were soon blessed with both a thriving business and a busy family. Over the course of 16 years, we had 9 children. We threw ourselves into growing them into well-rounded, educated, talented, and resilient individuals. This included almost every type of activity that you can imagine, from music lessons, 4-H, hobby farming, kid-run businesses, sports, homeschooling, international travel, and the like. We were hands-on, full-time, raising kids. From the world's perspective, our kids wanted from nothing. From a spiritual perspective, we also fed them full. Church, family devotions, camps, Christian schools, Awana, loving mentors, we were a model family life today type family. Our kids succeeded. John and I were proud. We took full credit that life was good. We took full credit for the good our kids were becoming. Now, the third child in our brood was our son Jake. And to understand this story, you need to understand Jake. From the time he was a newborn, John and I would describe Jake as having a wise old soul trapped in a baby body. That wise old soul quality never left. Jake was unique. He was quirky. He was special. The story that popped into my mind to put this into words was his kindergarten experience. For those of you that were at Jake's funeral service, you've heard this part of the story. I got a call from the teacher one day that perhaps we should get Jake tested. She said he couldn't count to 100, and that even after she repeatedly worked with him, he would not write his name on the line that said name. Now, this was concerning to John and I, because even though as parents we never compared our children, many of us sit right here, we did believe that Jake was our smartest child. I sat him down to work through this issue. I had him write his name, J-A-K-E. How hard is that? Well, for Jake, the hook of the J went way under the line. It went halfway down the page. The other letters were all bunched up, touching each other on that line. I explained, this isn't correct. He looked at me and he said, Mom, the line on the paper, it's the water. The J is the fish hook. It's got to go way under that line to catch the fish. The other letters all have to touch because they're the fishing boat. We can't let water get in the fishing boat. Now, how could I argue with that? I then asked Jake to count with me. We counted together. 1, 2, 3. We made it all the way to 100. I said, Jake, your teacher says you can only count to 39. So what's going on? He said, well, Mom, didn't you see what happened at 39? I'm thinking, what happened at 39? He said, didn't you get tired? I get tired. I get tired of counting. I just stop there. Those two snippets describe Jake's entire approach to life. If Jake loved something, he was all in. Starting with Legos, rescue heroes, growing into music, flannel shirts, fishing, his food, Jake could make an entire meal out of, gourmet meal out of things he could find at the gas stations. His friends, if Jake wasn't interested in doing something, there was no way you could get him to do it. Jake was talented. The music he wrote, the things he built, the wit that could pour off his tongue without effort, his dance moves. Jake's sense of humor was hilarious. He could keep his family and friends in hysterics with his antics. Jake was the most sensitive guy I know. In many ways, he was too soft for this world. He spent his childhood loving animals. He had a special gift in relating to animals and in relating to people who were in need of love. Jake stretched us as parents, and we tried our best. He had all kinds of geckos and snakes, and he liked to dally along at a pace that was all his own. Jake had lots of friends. Friends who loved life. Friends who were independent and did lots of things they loved. Fishing, day trips, more fishing. Jake did become the smartest guy I know. His mind was always going. He would do math in his head and would constantly read what most of us say was completely useless information. As our homeschooled kids worked on projects over the years, my frequent response to their questions, ranging from science to pop culture, was, let me Google it. But if Jake was in the house, he knew the answers. Any question we could ask, Jake knew the answer. So what answer would Jake give as to why, in March of 2018, just over a year ago, it fell to me as his mother to sit down and write the following words? The world lost a special guy last week. John Jacob, Jake Cronje, will be waiting for his family and friends in heaven. Jake was born March 26, 1998, to John and Lisa Cronje. Jake was well loved by his family, leaves behind his siblings, Lily, Liam, Fiona, Emmy, Grace, Viola, and Tice. He also leaves behind his grandparents, Elvin and Carol Starkenberg, and Hilda Cronje, and great-grandmother, Viola Vandriot. Jake was surrounded by aunts and uncles and cousins galore. Jake leaves a huge hole in the lives of his many friends. Jake was met at heaven's door by a whole contingent that includes his grandpa, Buzz Cronje, and his sister, Stephanie Rose. So beyond that, what would I say in an obituary of a 19-year-old? Jake had a quick wit and incredible brilliance. He would have had the words, but they would have been one-liners. Here are some of the words and phrases to describe Jake. One of the three best sons in the world. loyal, compassionate, selfless, friend, legendary, passionate, born again, animal lover, music fanatic, guitar player, adventurer, avid learner, kind of a big deal, hilarious, flannel shirt collector, wise, nature lover, dancing machine, prankster, soft-hearted, aching soul. What answer do we have as to why this model, Family Life Today family, is writing an obituary for a 19-year-old? What answer would the guy who looked to the outside world as having it all give to explain why he would end his life? Looking backwards always gives a better sense of perspective, and that is what I get to do now. What I now realize with a clarity that is haunting is the following. Although Jake was always a sensitive person and took the hurts of the world onto his shoulders, he weathered life pretty well. Then, in the middle of his freshman year of college, things started to unravel. Jake would talk about being depressed. He talked about wanting to be alone, talked about more uncertainty in this world. I took this all very positively. He was sharing his feelings. He was going through a phase. He was just finding himself. Everyone liked Jake, but Jake reached a point where he started not liking Jake. What people liked about Jake was that Jake was genuine. He was real. Everyone liked Jake, except Jake. As he started his young adult life, he thought he needed to be better, to do better, to have things more worked out. He started to feel anxious about life, about how he fit in life. We took him to a doctor, started some medicine, and I thought, problem solved. But for Jake, that was just another sign. He was not handling life. So how do we go from having an 18-year-old graduating with a gold cord hanging around his neck, to having a packed graduation party featuring his own band, to having a 19-year-old laying in a coffin with a bullet in his brain? I don't really know, because only Jake had the answers. What I do know is that this is my reality. When you talk about suicide and taking one's life by suicide, people assume a certain type of person, a loner, someone who does not fit in. This is not Jake. His life's end was not expected, yet that is often the case. Sometimes the people who give continually to be someone's friend, to be funny, to be a model son, model daughter, they're really just masking their hurts. They refuse to admit their struggles, and they run out of gas. One woman who was at that point where Jake found himself, but she survived, she told me, Jake did not want to die. Nobody wants to die. It goes against every fiber in our bodies to want to die. Jake did not want to die, but he wanted to stop some hurt for a moment that was consuming him, and he did not know any other way. Jake did not want to die. He wanted to end the hurt. I titled this talk, Hope Out of Hopelessness. So what hope is there for me that can come out of this hopelessness? What hope can we provide as a Christian community, as a church? My first hope: no other mother should ever have to tell this story. Is that possible? I don't know, but I can tell you that talking about it is a start. Topics like depression, anxiety, mental health, suicide, these are topics that are hard to bring up, hard to talk about. Want to put a strain on a conversation? Even mention these words. These are taboo topics in the adult world. Taboo topics in Christian circles. But this needs to change. Let me read you something that appeared in the Bellingham Herald last week. A high and increasing number of Whatcom County teens say they feel anxious and depressed and have seriously considered suicide, according to the Whatcom County Health Department. The trend is seen statewide. Worried about the trend, public health officials are encouraging adults and peers to help troubled teens. Based on the county data, a typical 10th grade classroom of 30 Whatcom County students would have about 20 students feeling nervous or anxious, 11 students who felt sad or hopeless in the last 2 weeks, 7 students who seriously considered suicide this past year, 2 students who've tried to kill themselves in that same time. This is consistent with suicide statistics. Suicide is the second leading cause of death for college-age youth and youth aged 12 to 18. More teenagers and young adults die from suicide than from cancer, heart disease, AIDS, birth defects, stroke, pneumonia, influenza, and chronic lung disease combined. We don't know what brought Jake to such a low point mentally that he decided that heaven was better than earth. It could have been a combination of several things. Was it genetic? Was it the onset of a serious mental breakdown? The side effect from the commonly prescribed drug he started taking? The impact from a concussion he'd received from a car accident? The social pressure of not liking where he was at in life? Of his wrecking his truck, breaking up with a girl, feeling stuck? I don't know. I will never know. But I think that it was a combination of all of that. A combination that Jake didn't know how to fix, and that his educated family didn't know how to fix. I am not a mental health professional, so I am not going to delve into the whys. Is it smartphones, technology, social pressures? Who knows? I don't know. But what I do know is I have received several messages, phone calls, and texts in the past year from parents who need help in helping their kids, and they don't know where to turn. I didn't know where to turn. I thought we were alone. Jake thought he was alone in facing difficulty with mental health. So the first step in bringing hope out of hopelessness is talking. Share your stories. Share your struggles. Share your ideas for resources. Share so people don't feel alone. Don't feel hopeless. If you struggle with anxiety or depression, share your stories. Be real. If you aren't struggling with these issues at this point in your life, be willing to listen. Really listen. When you see a Facebook post about cancer, people frequently suggest good doctors, good treatment ideas, stories about the hope of healing. People jump in. They try to help. Yet, when it comes to mental health, brain health, as I like to now call it, we don't share our struggles. We don't share our resources. We don't share our good doctors or our treatment ideas. We hide. We allow the next person to suffer in silence. Satan loves to separate us, to make people feel alone. We need to lean into each other, talk, share. The second step of hope is to stop the stigma. Our brains are part of our bodies, an organ, just like any other organ. Yet as Christians, we frequently hide our struggles. We fear being labeled. We fear that issues with our mental health are spiritual battles, a weakness we are fighting. When Jake started struggling, we as parents struggled with how not to get him labeled. How to make sure we were not making more of an issue than there really was. Trying to make him think he was okay. Trying to not seek help if help was not necessary. Why? Because we were fearful about labeling him, because of the stigma, that people would think he was damaged goods, that all of his talents and accomplishments would be wiped out. When Jake died, we decided to be honest about what happened. What shocked me is how many people I knew who had experienced the pain of mental health, issues they'd faced or family had faced, suicides their families had faced, but I never heard about it. What also shocked me was my own reaction. While I could be honest, I also panicked. When people called to ask our girls to babysit, when our girls had friends over, when people asked me to give them advice, even though I thought I could be honest about what happened, I still felt like there was stigma. I felt we were damaged goods. As I said previously, John and I took credit for the good our kids did, the talent, the skills, the fun personalities. But now that left us holding blame and shame for the ugly as well. What I've come to realize is that we need to be willing to accept that life and life struggles are bigger than we are, and there should not be a stigma from experiencing mental health issues. Some of the same parents who've reached out to ask if they could ask me questions about how their kids could be helped through mental health struggles have started the conversation with the concept that I would not want to talk about it. That something that has rocked my world to the core is something that I would not want to talk about, that I would want to pretend just did not happen. But going to a happy place where I can forget what happened is not an option. Otherwise, other parents and kids will be left feeling just as isolated and stigmatized as Jake felt, as we felt as a family. By not talking, by not sharing, by not acknowledging that brain health is part of our overall health, we isolate people. We make them feel that they are not normal when they struggle. In one of Jake's earliest conversations with me about how he was feeling very down about himself, I told him I understood how he felt, and his look was one of relief. He said, "I didn't think anybody would understand." The Cronje family is no stranger to mental illness. John's dad was bipolar, and Jake still thought nobody would understand. We need to stop the silence and the stigma. Christians can further this stigma without even realizing it. The Bible is full of wonderful sources of hope. These verses are tossed out like lifelines to struggling people. Philippians 4:6, be anxious in nothing. Isaiah 41:10, do not fear, for I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you. 2 Corinthians 12:9, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is perfected in weakness. Yet, when a person is struggling with depression or anxiety, these verses can cause even a greater spiral. Not only do they fail to help the struggling person, they can actually push them further down. They feel there's something wrong with them, something wrong with their Christian walk if they cannot grab these verses and pull through. John and I were great Christian parents, quoting these encouraging verses to Jake. Yet, for Jake, this approach only made him feel more alienated. The Christian approach did not provide him hope. It made him feel beyond hope when calling to God did not even help. The Bible is filled with stories of great men of God, God's chosen men who struggled with keeping their own equilibrium. Look at some of David's writings, Solomon's struggles, Samson's low points. We need to remember as Christians that God chooses and uses people who don't always have everything together. The idea that there are forces at work that are bigger than we are, that are unknown to us, can clearly be seen in the story of Job. Job was facing terrible calamity. His children died. His livestock died. His wealth was stripped. His health was compromised. Did his children's death result from something they did? No. Did all of the problems that Job was facing result from something he did wrong? No. What was his friend's reaction, though, to what was happening to him? They assumed that Job had done something wrong, something to anger God. Yet we know from reading the entire book of Job that his suffering came from what he was doing right. The battle he was facing had nothing to do with him, but everything to do with a larger battle between God and the devil. There can be a whole other act that's playing out on a bigger stage, and we have no idea what that act is. Yet it's playing out right around us, just out of our sight. We need to recognize that we don't understand this bigger picture, and that when we ignore or stigmatize struggles, we may actually be turning our back on a story that God is allowing to play out. The third thing that we can do to bring hope from hopelessness is to do something. Go back to the Bellingham Herald article. Worried about the trend, public health officials are encouraging adults and peers to help troubled teens. As Christians, as a church, don't leave this help come from the secular world. Embrace these hurting young people. Perhaps all of the hopelessness they feel comes from a world that's out of control, from a world that's focused on things that are not important, from the constant pressure to succeed, to outdo the next person, a world that has no moral absolutes. Life is complicated for these kids, and they can sometimes be without any compass. As Christians, we need to step into that gap. Help provide a compass, a purpose for life. Encourage these hurting young people. Validate them in their struggles. Let them know it is okay to be themselves. God has created everyone unique. Everyone special in his image. So do something to fill that gap. I understand better than anybody that mental health issues are not easy to solve. That mental health issues are not easy to fix. They are bigger than us. Knowing that gives us Christians an advantage to do something. We can call in the army of God to fight depression, anxiety, and hopelessness in people, not just young people, but all people. We can fight with the only thing we have. We can fight with our prayers and our praise. We can fight against the darkness by calling on God and his armies. I am not saying that medical science is not necessary for mental health treatment. I am not saying that at all. I am saying that to the extent that with this extent of the problem with our young people, that this shows it's even a bigger issue than one person's chemistry or one person's chemical imbalances. We need to fight this battle medically and spiritually. 2 Chronicles 20 is an account that helps me bring this to life. The Moabites and Ammonites and a bunch of other people were trying to wage war against Judah. And Jehoshaphat was looking at a whole army coming at him. The people of Judah came together to seek help from the Lord. They came from every town to seek him. And Jehoshaphat prayed a long prayer in which he said, "For we have no power to face this vast army that's attacking us. We do not know what to do, but our eyes, God, are on you." All the men of Judah, with their wives and children and little ones, stood there before the Lord. God then gave this message back. "You will not have to fight this battle. Take up your positions, stand firm, and see the deliverance the Lord will give you, Judah and Jerusalem. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Go out to face them tomorrow. The Lord will be with you." The story then plays out that when Judah went into battle, singing and praising God, that God had already sent an ambush. The men of Judah arrived. The battle was done. The enemy already laid there dead. What I like about this historical account is that the entire tribe was put into action, men, women, kids. They all called out to God. The story is not one where the leaders told each soldier, "Run out to battle. You call on to God. God will help you." No, they all stood together. So go back to your typical Christian approach to someone who is suffering from depression or anxiety. Our help of throwing out those verses, "Be anxious in nothing. Do not fear, I'm with you. Do not look anxiously around you. My grace is sufficient," to a person who's having a bad day or is overwhelmed, throwing those life rings may help. They can grab onto that life ring and feel safe. But to those people who feel like they are drowning, Those life rings we toss out to them land on the water, and they can't even grab them. They continue to drown. But we as Christians keep throwing out these life rings to hit the water next to them, and then we often walk away. I challenge you to do something more. Don't just throw out a life ring to a drowning person. Recognize that sometime you need to realize you need to jump into the water. Don't expect the person struggling to pray away their struggles on their own. Remember, the typical classroom of 30 in Whatcom County, 20 nervous, anxious students, 11 who've said they're sad or hopeless, 7 considering suicide, 2 who have tried to kill themselves. Wow. We are facing a battle. Don't ask these kids to fight on their own. Don't ask their families to fight alone. They don't want to die. They just want to stop the hurt. Like the tribe of Judah, facing what seemed like an insurmountable battle, we need to join together, call on God together. As a church, put together some practical support and spiritual supports to battle this together. For Jake, it is too late. However, to turn my hopelessness into hope, I need to concentrate on stopping this epidemic. Help me by being the hands and feet of Jesus, by talking, stopping the stigma, and doing something, even if it's only to intervene in concentrated prayer for the mental battles people are facing. This is a spiritual battle. It is not spiritual weakness. In many ways, we are making our kids fight this battle alone. We need to stand up and recognize the problems and help. So all of these ideas are too late for Jake. So do we beat ourselves up about it and about his death or what could have and should have been? Personally, I just need to focus on the fact that God is in charge. Often we pray a simple prayer, "Thy will be done." Oftentimes, we resort to this simple prayer after exhausting our own resources. We pray this prayer as if we were giving God permission to do his will. We are resigned. We pray this prayer stressing, thy will be done, as if we are saying, "Lord, I am now giving this situation to you." But we are focusing on the wrong syllable of this prayer. We focus on giving God permission to take control. Yet, in my simple, non-theological way, I have come to realize that the correct reading of this directive from God is that he doesn't need permission to take control. He is already in control. This prayer is a recognition of that. It would be more proper to say, "Thy will be done." It is not a question or a choice. God's will be done. So, was it Jake's will, or was it God's will that Jake die? Not in a perfect world. The best I can get my head around that is by going back to the story from kindergarten. If life is like counting to 100, then Jake got tired at 39. And even though he could count to 100, he chose not to. And he quit counting at 39 because he was tired. So just like we said when Jake was in kindergarten, it's time to take Jake home and homeschool him where his uniquenesses and talents can run free. God said, it's time to let Jake come home. He is tired and ready for peace. Because when Jake chose to do something, you could not change his mind. So if life goes to 100, Jake got tired of counting, and God let him stop at 39. We will never know what we could have done differently. We don't get that chance. But we do know that Jake was well-loved. Jake was able to talk with us even when he was struggling. Jake was able to love life with us all the way to the end. His last words to me were, "Love you too, Mom." So no matter how much we want a different result, no matter how much we want to rewrite the events of Jake's death, it would not make a difference. God did not write another page in Jake's story. God allowed Jake to head to heaven. It was not our hope or our dream. It was not what God intended. But God knew, and he did not intervene. God's will be done. So if you are sitting here today and you feel more hopelessness than hope, what can you learn from Jake? Let Jake's legacy help you understand something. God made you each special, different, unique. You need to celebrate who you are, not mask it. What people liked about Jake was that Jake was genuine. He was real. Everyone liked Jake. Except Jake. He thought he needed to do better, be better, have life more worked out. But we know other people don't always have things worked out. We don't always have things worked out. Most of us are just pretending to have it all together. So, in honor of Jake, just be yourself. Let God direct your plan and purpose. You don't have to. Each day, you need to recognize that you and your day have a purpose to God. Jake chose death, something way too permanent, to escape his own battles and hurts. But many of us are escaping ourselves in life by masking our hurts and our insecurities every day with our looks, our possessions, by competing with others, hiding our feelings, masking ourselves and our hurts in alcohol or drugs. For those of you who feel that way, it's not too late. You can start being real and comfortable with who you are. You can make sure that you are secure in the fact that you are exactly who you are, because that is what God intends, and He has a plan for your future. Oftentimes, people describe our inability to understand life as the backside of a tapestry. We only see the backside, the messy side, the side that is full of loose strings and knots. Yet someday, when our work on earth is done, we will see the other side of the tapestry, and it will be beautiful, a picture that we had no idea that was being created. My hope, together with the hope revealed through Jake's legacy, is that you will realize that to create such a tapestry requires all kinds of threads of all kinds of colors. If we are the threads that God intends, we all need to be different. We each need to be our own color, the color God gave us. For those of you who see Jake in yourself, recognize you are not alone. I get it now. Recognize you can't solve this problem alone. You are not a bad Christian or a bad person if you feel bad. Remember, Satan attacks those God plans to use. If you don't know why you are living today or where you are going if you die, then for Jake's sake, for his legacy, talk to me, talk to your pastor. With God, things don't become perfect. Look at my family. We would not be here today. I would not be standing here today if God made things perfect, if He removed all hurts. But God gives perspective, and the world's perfect doesn't matter. There is no need for the world's perfect. God also gives hope. To create a tapestry requires all kinds of threads of different colors. We need to be our own different thread, our own color, the color God gave us. So how did Jake go from hopelessness to hope? We know where Jake is. Jake is in heaven. Jake accepted Christ when he was about 8. He dedicated his life to Christ, and we were excited to share that with him. Jake was baptized in our pond, and we hosted a big party to celebrate. Jake's last Google search on the night he died was whether he could end his life and go to heaven. It was important to him. Now, I have been able to celebrate Jake's entry into heaven. It is too soon. It is in too painful of a way. But yet he made it there. As a mom, that's all I can ask for. We can all wish that things would have been different for Jake. But God is in control. God did not plan another day for Jake on this earth. He did not write another chapter in Jake's story. God knew the day that Jake was coming to him, and we cannot change that. But as much as Jake's death has hurt us, he's also given us a gift of knowing without a doubt where he is, a gift of knowing someday we will see him in heaven, a gift of knowing that God has a plan. To create a tapestry that is beautiful, one thread needs to end and another needs to start right where it ended. In that way, we are intertwined to make the final picture. So Jake's thread on earth has ended, and we continue to wrap his thread, pulling it tight to create a picture. Jake left us a note when he chose to leave this earth. I want to share it with you as the message is really for all of us. I'm sorry. My last act on this earth will leave a lot of pain, but I feel I will do less harm in death than I will do in the next 50 years of my life. I love you all. I look forward to seeing you all in heaven. Please don't blame yourself for my death. I am truly blessed to have been born into such a beautiful family and community. I love you all. One of the last things that Jake wrote for school was a paper he submitted the week before he died. There's a paragraph in there I want to share. Jake wrote, "I have always considered my legacy to be the most important thing that I can create while I'm on this earth. The idea of leaving a negative or insignificant impact on the world has always been a fear of mine." Jake left his legacy for us to complete, for us to make sure his journey has meaning. Please don't let his legacy be negative or insignificant. Help to carry on Jake's legacy. Recognize it is okay to talk about not being okay. Help people, especially our young people, recognize this world is messed and that you need to look for eternal perspective and to stop chasing what this world values. Stop trying to measure up to the world standards. Our life here on earth is like a dot on paper, and some of you have probably seen this before, and I'm not sure which book I got it out of, but there's this dot on a piece of paper. That dot represents our life here on earth. It's finite, it will end. Eternity is the line that goes off of the paper. Eternity never ends. Don't concentrate on the dot. Concentrate on the line that never ends. For me to bring Jake's legacy, to make Jake's legacy significant, I need to be sure his story is told and to try to bring hope from his hopelessness. Every year we celebrate Jake's birthday. Last year, right after he died, this year, a year later, we call it Be Like Jake Day. It's a celebration of Jake's life because Jake's life is not defined by his death. Jake's life is defined by his life. We all wear these little Be Like Jake buttons because everybody should live like Jake lived, and nobody should have to die like Jake died. So it's Mother's Day. The best gift that I have from Jake is knowing that he is in heaven. He is there, healthy and new. The best gift that you can give to your mom is to let her know the same thing. Make sure that Jake's last words are true for you. Make sure that Jake gets to meet you in heaven. Thank you.